Matt Gathu talks about success our community can have with less abrasion and grief. What a welcome relief. So that's something we really should stress.
Hey, hello everyone. Hi. I'm super excited to be here. I'm Matt, all the way from Ras, Nairobi. Just a minute. So a little bit about me. So my talk is about Rust community, supercharging Rust community. And my story of how I got into Rust was that in 2017, I got lucky to be accepted in the first Rust Rich program. And I spent 3 months working with really nice mentors. I believe one of the mentors is here. Also working with another colleague, and we were basically in different places. We had different interests, different nationalities, and I got a really good experience from those 3 months. And the fact that the Rust community was welcoming and good to me, I felt challenged, and I decided that I will start a meetup locally. So, and here we are. That's why I started the Rust Nairobi meetup group. We've been there since October of last year, and it's been great so far. And so I was thinking, when I got the invitation to come speak, I thought it would be great to talk about community, since it's how I got into Rust, and it's something I really care about. So this is a map of countries around the globe where there is a sort of Rust interest. So there are actually Rustacians in these countries. And this is based on the Twitter followers of the official Rust account. And I want to show you another map. So this is another map, and it shows countries where we have Rust meetup groups, or there's like a Rust user group, and this is based on off from meetup.com. And if you kind of just compare the two maps, you can see that there are way more countries where there's actual interest in Rust, and there are Rust developers, but there are no like communities, or they're not visible. And my talk is designed around that. How do we scale communities to be worldwide, you know, scale it beyond what we currently have? And personally, from experience, when I started Rust Nairobi, it's not easy. And even I've been having a few conversations with people who are involved in running meetup groups and communities, and they say it's not easy, and I personally felt challenged. It felt almost like I need to build this thing, and I'm alone, I don't know how to start. But having had the experience from the Rust Rich program, I knew that Rust itself, as a project, it's a really, it's a success, it's a triumph. And this can actually be shown. There's data that actually shows how Rust as a project is successful. So, and just to highlight this, so there was the, I believe it's the 2018 Stack Overflow Developer Survey. In this survey, we had 78% of the developers saying that they love Rust. It's actually voted the most loved language. And it's not only this year, it's been for the last 3 years, which is amazing to see how much people love Rust. It's also a popular project on GitHub, and just looking at the number of people who have actually done contributions to the compiler, and this number could have changed because there are always more contributors to the project. And also looking at the number of tools that people have built with the language based on the number of crates that are there on crates.io. And the interesting thing is that the number of crates have been growing exponentially over time. So I started to ask myself that since Rust as a project is really successful, what makes it so successful? What are the ideas that the Rust project has? What is this thing that is being done so consistently that over the years there's been success stories? And how can we learn from this to build our local communities? So I have several ideas that personally I think are very important in the Rust project and that we can learn from. And I'll talk about flat governance, I'll explain that. I'll also talk about diversity and inclusivity. Also about having a roadmap, having a vision. Also decision making, and lastly, about having a code of conduct. And the idea here is that since these ideas are sort of the spirit of the Rust project, then as Rust communities and when we're building local communities, we should also try and emulate these ideas, or at least they can be a guiding light to our local communities. So on flat governance, so it's very interesting, and it's something I have noted that in Rust, there is no hierarchy in how the project is done. There are actually sub-teams that are divided, and they are more or less independent of each other, and are very autonomous. And the interesting thing about that is that things get to move really fast, because you don't have that bureaucracy of someone or the head of something has to approve anything. And also there is trust between each of the team, because you believe that the other team knows what they are doing, and you trust in them. And I think this is very important, even in our communities. So like when I was searching Rust Nairobi, I tried to, as quickly as possible, get other organizers involved. I didn't want to be the only person heading the meetup. So at the moment, we have four people in the organizing team. And the idea is that for we to like have a meetup or have a talk or do something administrative, like getting even as simple as getting someone into our Slack organization or our WhatsApp group, doesn't need for like one person to do that. If you're part of the organization team, at least you should be able to do that. And I think this model of governance where there is no one head of that is really great. So going back to my story about how I joined the Rust community. So diversity and inclusivity is more or less that, because the Rust Bridge program is designed to get Rust into to underrepresented groups. And I felt that having a goal, such a goal, was really great, because the community gets diversified. And I think also if we are doing local communities, we should also be conscious about and be very deliberate in making diversity a thing. And I know diversity and from experience is not easy. So I have this picture. This picture was from the first workshop we did. It was in April. And I'm sure most of you are thinking it's a weird picture there, and I'm talking about diversity, because if you look at it, there is no lady on the, in the picture. Yeah, and I realized that it's hard, but I think we have to be deliberate conscious, and it's something that me and my organizers are constantly thinking of: how do we make it easier for more people, you know, of all genders, of all technical skills, to come and join our groups. So this particular one here, we were, the majority of people who attended were college students, and we had targeted that. We knew there were people who are professional developers who are doing Rust in Nairobi, but we also knew that there's a community of students who are not even aware of the language. So also thinking of how you can reach out to people and basically improve the diversity and inclusivity. Then on the roadmap. So earlier on this year, there was the call for blog posts. This was before the Rust 2018 roadmap. So the roadmap was mostly influenced by the survey that was done in 2017. And also the call for blog posts, which was people talking about what they would want to see in Rust this year. And based off that, we have the roadmap, where now we have you know, working groups coming out of that. And the fact that you have sort of a plan for what you're doing, you're not, like for us, it's not like we do a meetup every month. We kept asking ourselves, what do we want to see in our community in Nairobi? Where do we want it to go? And early on this year, we said we have a goal that in 2018, we'd like to do a Rust Day event, so before the year ends. And how do we get there? So we said we will have meetups, and we will also do workshops. We will also try to do outreach, go to schools, speak to students, and all that being geared to the actual event at the end of the year. And this was, by and large, heavily influenced with how actually the Rust project is run, because also the project has a vision and a roadmap that we use as a guiding light to doing that. And the good thing about having a roadmap is that when you accomplish one thing, accomplish a task, it's a time for you to celebrate, because you've met a milestone in your journey. Also, it shows that the community has a shared vision. When you have new members, they feel connected, and they know that there's a journey and there's a story to this community. So I also think that this is a very good thing to have when you're starting a local Rust community. Then, a minute. So there's this thing called the RFC process, which is basically how features and changes to the Rust language are made, where someone suggests a feature, you have people deliberate about it, discuss, and then decide whether we are accepting it or rejecting it, and why. And this process is also very open. So you could go on GitHub and see all the RFCs that have been done. You could go to the users' forums and see the discussions that were had. And the fact that this process is open, and that the decisions that is made, for example, when you decide to accept or reject an RFC, it is not made behind closed doors. It's not made by one person. It is made by the community through active discussion and deliberation. I think it's something really cool about Rust, and I like it because I can always go and see why stuff was done and why things are the way they are. And I also think this is important in our communities. More so if you're doing something that is important to everyone, you should not make that decision yourself. You should try and seek feedback, and this can be through having town halls or actually sending a simple feedback form to your members, and then using that to guide your decision when you're deciding or doing an important decision. Then on the code of conduct. So I really like this quote. It's by Graydon. So I think that I feel like sometimes is underrated why the RAS community is very welcoming. It's a very safe community, and there's a lot of respect for you as an individual. And I think it's because even early on when the community was coming up, there was a very big conscious effort to make sure that the community will be safe, that it will be open and welcoming. I remember reading a discussion online where someone asked why the RAS code of conduct is a little weird to them. And this quote is pulled from that, where Graydon is explaining that he wanted the RAS community to be a home, because developers would go to other forums, other communities, and it was a bit toxic to them. And I think we should also spread this message for our local communities, that we are very conscious of people who join us. We are open and welcoming, and we also care about your safety and also show respect. Yeah. And lastly, I think that we should also take time to reflect and think about what we do as a community. And the reason for this is that it allows you to take a moment and breathe, and also look at what is working right, what is going wrong, where can we improve, and even also getting feedback from the community. And it allows you to iterate faster. So for example, when we did our first workshop, we talked to the participants and asked them, what did you like about the workshop? What didn't you like? What do you think should be improved? And that sort of introspection and reflection really goes a long way, since when we are planning our next workshop, we are able to improve on things that we didn't do quite well and also keep up the good stuff. Yeah. And I think community is way more than you just being part of a group. I think it matters what you do, because what you do is what makes that belonging important to you. It's not just a matter of saying you're in the group, but even the people you interact with and what you work on is also of importance. And making that environment is really great. And lastly, I would like to leave you with a quote. Don't ask what the community can do for you, but instead ask what you can do for the community. Thank you.
We do have a lot of time, so we can take questions. are the Christians. There's a Christian.
If you had one advice to give to someone who wants to open a say meetup in a in an area where there is no say Rust meetup or anything else, what would that advice be?
It will be to be persistent. Don't give up. So I remember the first two meetups that we had for Rust Nairobi. You know, in my mind, I knew that this is the first Rust meetup in Nairobi. There's going to be a lot of people will show up, and we had like a budget for like 20, 30 people, and then I think only 4 or 5 people showed. And I remember there was, at the end of the meetup, there was so much food and juice left, so we were actually telling people, can you carry this home? Because we bought all this stuff, but nobody showed up. And it happened for like the first two meetups, and then later on we got the numbers. So I think being persistent is key, yeah.
Do we have more questions?
Hi, thank you. Oh, that's very close. Thank you so much for the wonderful talk. I wanted to know what your tips would be to keep a meetup interesting enough for more experienced users, and but still accessible enough for someone who's coming for the first time.
Yeah, so that's a very good question, because it's something that we are actually struggling with. And what we thought was, because we knew that we couldn't always be doing like beginner talks, right? But we thought, how do we sort of cater for the two groups, where you have people who are new to Rust and you have people who are already used to it? So one idea we thought of is we would do workshops, and these workshops are meant for beginner people, essentially rope them in, and then during our normal meetups, those are a bit more sort of not beginner talks, so that we can also cater for the guys who are already attending our meetups. And even, because I mentioned we plan to have an event at the end of the year, that was an idea of, once we do this workshop, then we will have more in-depth workshop catering now for like intermediate devs. Yeah.
Okay. Hello, I'm from Madagascar, and the reason why we couldn't make a meetup at one time, the discussion came up, was because most people were not comfortable or didn't know how to start contributing. Mm-hmm. And they were looking for somewhere to learn how do you even start, make a contribution to code and things like that. So I was wondering if you, in Kenya, you found something to palliate that kind of fear, I guess, of exposing yourself in public.
What we've sort of done is, early on we looked at companies that were, tech companies that were active in Nairobi, and one of the projects we did was get our library was written in Python for an API wrapper, and rewrite it in Rust. And since the majority of the techies are actually familiar with that API, since the companies are very popular there, then it is very easy to rope them in, because they will have somewhat have done the same thing in a different language. I try to go and speak to communities, like not Rust communities. So I've spoken to the Python community at home, telling them about Rust and what it is about, and trying to get them involved too. So also think even getting sourcing existing tech communities can be good. Yeah.
Any more questions?
Hello. I'd like to add another remark regarding the introspection point you made. I think it's more general than the community, the history of the community. It's the history of the computer science in general, I think. And because the Rust community learns a lot from what other languages have done in the past and what mistakes they have done. And I think that it's the great force of the Rust community.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, because I kept asking myself, I don't have to sort of figure out how to build a great community, because the Rust project is really good and the Rust community is really good. So what can I learn from that? And yeah, I agree, the fact that Rust has learned from other communities too. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks our speaker again.